Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Mem Daladam with Bet, six lines from the bottom. The Gemara is still discussing the machloket over here between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim as to what they learned from which of the psukim. They're discussing heter mitzteref yitzur, tam ki ikar, and the sources within the psukim. So here we have a statement. Amalei Rav Acha Breda Rav Avi Rav Ashi. Mid Rabbanan. From the position of the Rabbanan, nishma the Rabbi Akiva. We can understand better the position of Rabbi Akiva. Milo Amri Rabbanan. The Rabbanan, when it came to Mishrat, the bread soaked in wine, when it came to the Nazir, they learned from that, Litain Tam Ki Ikar, to teach you that flavor has the same status as the object itself. It takes on a status of Isur. Mikanata Dan L'chotol Isurim Shib Torah. And from Nazir, you extrapolate to other Isurim Shib Torah. That means that from Nazir, you have the din of Tam Ki Ikar. And then from Nazir, you're able to then extrapolate that and learn to all other Isirim Shib Torah. So the Rabbi Akiva Naami. For Rabbi Akiva, it'd be the same way. Rabbi Akiva learns from Mishrat, not Tam Ki Ikar, but rather, Heter Mitzdaref Li'isur. That, when it comes to the bread that's soaked in wine, you have a din of Heter Mitzdaref Li'isur. We saw this before, Machloket Rashi and the other Rishonim. Rashi believes that means that the part of the bread that is not soaked in wine is also included towards the Kazayit or the Shi'ur that you need. The other Rishonim believe that only the part that has the wine in it is problematic. And again, we discuss what's the difference between, on Friday's daf, what's the difference between Tam Ki Ikar and Heter Mitzdaref Li'isur. Rabbi Akiva learns Heter Mitzdaref Li'isur from there. Mishrat, Heter Mitzdaref Li'isur, Mikana Dan, the Holy Surim Shebet Torah Kula. So from there, he'll extrapolate that to Kola Torah Kula, and will not only apply to Nazir, but will apply to Kola Torah Kula. Amalei. He says, why don't we do that? Now, why is that a problem? Because if you remember at the beginning of the sugya began at the bottom of Meg Bimon and Bet, where Amar Rabbi Bo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, called Yisurim Shebet Torah. When it came to other Yisurim in the Torah, Ein Heter Mitzdaref Li'isur Chutz Mi Yisurei Nazir. The only exception to that was Yisurei Nazir. That means that Rabbi Yochanan believes that Rabbi Akiva's position of Heter Mitzdaref Li'isur, which is learnt out of Nazir, is limited to Nazir, and you do not extrapolate it to other Yisurim Shebet Torah. Now, Rav Acha Breid Rav Avi is saying to Rav Ashi, I don't understand. How does Rabbi Yochanan have such a position? How does Rabbi Yochanan have a position that Nazir is the only place that Heter Mitzdaref Yisur applies, and doesn't apply to other things? Let's think about the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan themselves learn Mishrat and Nazir for a different purpose, which is Tam Ki Ikar. They take that and extrapolate it from Nazir to Kol HaTorah Kula. So if I look at Rabbi Kiva, who has Heter Mitzdaref Yisur by Nazir from Mishrat, he should also extrapolate it to Kol HaTorah. So why does Rabbi Yochanan say it's limited to Nazir, and it does not apply to other Yisurim Shebet Torah? The answer is, Amalei, Rav Ashi responds to him and says, Shum Dab Nazir v'chatat shnei ktuvim habayim ke'chad ve'im lamdim. Because you have two psukim that teach you the exact same din, and since you have two psukim teaching you the same din, from that we learn that these are the exception and not the rule. So we've done this many times whenever we have this principle in Shas, which is if the Torah gives you a din by a single halacha or a single circumstance, then what we can say is that it's setting up a binyan ab, it's setting up a paradigm, and then we'll follow that paradigm and call it Torah Kula. We can extrapolate from that one item and look at other Yisurim. As soon as the Torah tells you the same din in two different halachot or two different circumstances, why was it necessary to do that? It's only necessary to do that because it's telling you don't learn from this one to Kol HaTorah Kula, because I had to tell you in these two instances become the exception rather than the rule. So had we just had the rule by Nazir, we would have extrapolated that to Kol HaTorah Kula. But since now we have it by Nazir and Chatat, I say, wait, this isn't a rule anymore, this is the exception. And that's what I mean, Shnei Ketuvim Habayim Kechad Eim Lamdim, which is, since we have it manifest itself in two separate circumstances, in two separate dinim, where I could have learned one from the other, and instead the Torah taught it to me anyway, it's come to teach me that these are the exceptions. Nazir, Hadamran. We already know Heter Mitzdaref Yisur by Nazir from what we said before, which is Mishrat. From the word Mishrat, Rabbi Akiva learns out Heter Mitzdaref Yisur. Chatat, Mahi. Where do we know from a Chatat there's a din of Heter Mitzdaref Yisur? D'tanya. Kol asher yiga bivsara yikdash. Anything that touches the basar will become kodesh. Yochol afilu lo bala. You would think even if it doesn't absorb it, tamalomer bivsara. Bivsara is with the bet means inside. Ad shivula basar till it's brought into the basar, swallowed up into the basar until it's part of the basar. Then yigdash liot kamoa. It becomes similar to it. Sheim psula hiti pasal. Veim ksheirahi tochal kechamur ba. So if it's psula, meaning that the item that is being absorbed is already psul, then the absorption of that item ruins the item that it gets absorbed into. If the item is kasher, then tochal kachamur shabbat. For instance, if you have shlamim and a chatat that are getting mixed together, well, it depends where you are in the lifespan of the shlamim. But for instance, if you're on the last day of the shlamim, and then it gets mixed together with a chatat, a shlamim is eaten for 2 days and one night. A day, night, and then the next day. So that would be the limit of that shlamim, is that day itself. A chatat is eaten the day it's shechted plus the night afterwards. So if you have now a chatat and shlamim that get together, the chomer shabbat here would be the shlamim. The shlamim ends, it terminates its time at the end of that day, whereas a chatat has even into the night. Or the other way around. If you have a chatat and a shlamim on the same day, they were shechted, then chatat is only good for that day and that night, whereas the shlamim is good that day, that night, the next day. But it'll be cut off by the chomer shabbat by the chatat. So you have two korbanot, or two forms of kodoshim that are absorbed into each other, then you go to the chomer shabbat. You go to the more stringent of the two. So because of that, we see that how do you get to a shi'ur over here? The shi'ur over here is that you have bliyah, you have some sort of absorption into the other item, and then we say the whole thing comes of kachamush famurba. So that's why we say here that it's called heter mitzdarif li'isur. So if you have chulin or you have kodoshim that are absorbing from one of these kodoshim, the item that is absorbing now the properties of the item that it absorbed. So for instance, if for the chatat or the kodashim were pasul, they were pigul, or they had something else wrong with them, and then they were absorbed into the other item, and if this new item was a kosher kodashim, then if you eat a portion of it, then you get the punishment of that kezayit, the isur, as if you ate a complete kezayit of isur. So that's why we know from here, heter mitzdareif the isur. So now I have two dinim that teach me that same principle, which is heter mitzdarif li'isur. One by nazir, and one by chatat. So now the Gemara says, Rabbana nami. So why don't we say the same thing by Rabbani? Nami nazir v'chatat, shnei ketuvim habayim ke'achat. Why don't we say the same thing over that nazir and chatat are two psukim that come and teach you the same din, ve'eim lamdim. And therefore they shouldn't be able to learn from it. Meaning that the understanding here is that Chachamim would have used it for Tam Ki Ikar in both instances. They use Nazir for Tam Ki Ikar, and they use Chatat for Tam Ki Ikar. So if they do that, they also have the same problem. If Shnei Ketuvim Bayim Kechad, it should be an exception rather than the rule. So Anu Mitzrach Tzrichei. No, they need these Psukim. Because they can't learn one from the other. So Gemara says, Rabbi Kiva Mait Tzrichei. Doesn't he have that? What's the need for them? I agree with you, if the Torah writes it by chatat, lo gamar nazir mina. You couldn't learn out a nazir from chatat, because you can't say something that's by kodashim, you can't learn out a non-kodashim, because kodashim might be chamur. And if it's chamur, you can't say that since the din is so by kodashim, so is it so by chulin. But, to chulin mi kodashim lo gamrina, because we don't learn out chulin from kodashim. Ela, lichtov rachmana bin nazir, let the Torah just write it by nazir, and then I could have learned out chatat from it, and then you could have learned out. So had the Torah just written the din by Nazir, I would have been able to learn chatat from that, and I don't need any more. So why did the Torah write it by chatat? So if that's the case, then chatat comes, it says, I'm writing extra, which was not necessary, it comes to teach you, because we can learn out any Isur Mitarah from Nazir. So then the Rabbanon are in the same position. They're in the same position, which is that we would have a tzricha here. So Rabbanon Yamalecha mitzrach tzricha. Hatat leheter mitzdarif leisur. The Chachamim say, no, we're not going to use hatat for tam kikar, but rather heter mitzdarif leisur. V'chulim mikdashim lo gamar. From chulim cannot be extrapolated from kodoshim, because kodoshim are its own world, and you can't learn out chulim from it. U'mishrat litein tam kikar. And they learn out of mishrat tam kikar. And from that, you can extrapolate to the Kol HaTorah Kula. Rabbi Kiva, on the other hand, Rabbi Kiva learns, they're both, Chatat and Nazir, going to be used for Heter Mitzrayf Lissur. And therefore, now you have Shnei Ketuvim Bayim Kechad, Chol Shnei Ketuvim Bayim Kechad, Ein Melamdim. And if you have two Sukkim that come and teach you the same din, then they cannot be Melamed. So now, if I look at Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim now, and give you a summary of their positions. We have three areas from which you can learn the din. Mishrat, which is Nazir. You have Chatat, which is we saw Yigdash, and we had Geulei Nachrim, which is on yesterday's daf. From the Geulei Nachrim, you can also learn out the din of Tam. So now, for Rabbi Akiva's position. According to Rabbi Akiva's position, he learns out Tam Kikar from Geulei Nachrim. He learns out by the fact that by Midyan, we made you be Mitaher the Kleilim in order to use them. He learns out Tam Kikar because Rabbi Akiva believes that Klei Midyan were Bat Yoman. Klei Midyan were Bat Yoman, so there was a good Tam in there. And we say you got to get rid of it. If they were Enu Bat Yomo and it was a Tam Livgam, you wouldn't have to do anything. So there's no Chiddush by Geulei Nachrim. When it's a good flavor, you gotta get rid of it. Bad flavor, you don't gotta get rid of it. That teaches you Tam Ki Ikar. That's the source for Rabbi Akiva for Tam Ki Ikar, number one. Then, Rabbi Akiva by Mishrat and Chatat says they're both coming to teach you Heter Mitzaref Isur. By Nazir, it's necessary to teach you that din. By Chatat, it was unnecessary to teach you that din because you could have learned it from Nazir. The fact that I have two psukim teaching me that tells me that Heter Mitzaref Isur is limited to these two cases and cannot be extrapolated. So that would be the din of Rabbi Akiva. Heter mitzaref l'isur, like Rabbi Yochanan says, is limited to the din of Nazir, and of course, Chatat. Geulei Nachrim, which Shisha says, Tam Ki Ikar, will be extrapolated to Kol HaTorah Kula, and Tam Ki Ikar applies to the whole Torah Kula. That's Rabbi Akiva's position. Chachamim's position is, first of all, Geulei Nachrim cannot be the source for anything, because it's a Chiddush. Why is it a Chiddush? Because they believe there was an Eino Bat Yomo. But the case by Geulei Nachrim was a case where it's Tam Lifgam. And despite the fact that it's Tam Lif Gam, you still have to get rid of it. You have to take care of the flavor in there. So the Chachamim said, that's a Chiddush. I cannot learn anything out of Midyan. Midyan is not your classic case, because there you have even Tam Lif Gam, a bad flavor, and we're still making you get rid of it from the Kelim. So whatever the din is by Geulei Nachrim is a Chiddush unique to Kli Midyan, and I cannot learn from that. Therefore, where do I learn out Tam Kikar from? I learn that out from Mishrat by Nazir. So Chachamim's source for Tam Kikar is from Mishrat by Nazir. That's only one pasuk that's mentioned there. Numbers two is, I learned out Heter Mitzaref Isur from Chatat. Over here, this case of Chatat. Therefore, for the Chachamim, Tam Ki Ikar, I can extrapolate to Kol HaTorah Kula, because it's only mentioned by Nazir, and therefore I'll extrapolate it. We don't have Shnei Ketuvim Kamim Ke'echad, extrapolate to Kol HaTorah Kula. On the other hand, Heter Mitzaref Isur, even though now they agree with Rabbi Akiva that Heter Mitzaref Isur does exist, there is such a concept, for them it'll be limited to Kodashim. Because the source for Heter Mitzaref Isur will be by Chatat, and since Chatat is Kodoshim, then it will be limited to Kodoshim. We will not be able to extrapolate Din into Chulin, because you can't learn out Chulin for Kodoshim. Therefore, for Rabbi Akiva, Heter Mitzaref Isur only applies by Chatat and Nazir, whereas for the Chachamim, Heter Mitzaref Isur will apply only to Kodoshim, but that's broader than Rabbi Akiva, but not to anything else. Tam Ki Ikar, for both of them, will be extrapolated to Kol HaTorah. Effectively, Rabbi Akiva from Geulei Nachrim, and the Chachamim from Mishrat by Nazir. Right, you could say that. You would naturally say, especially according to Rashi's Pshat, it would seem that Heter Mitzaref Isur is a bigger Chiddush than Tam Ki Ikar. So the first thing you would learn out is Tam Ki Ikar. The second thing you would learn out is Heter Mitzaref Isur. We're going to see that that's not so simple from the Gemara, that that's the case, because you could argue the other way around, which is Tam Ki Ikar says that something that has no mamashut, has no physical properties to it, is still imparting flavor and you're saying that it's asur. Whereas by Heter Mitzaref Isur, you're still talking about something that has physical properties. So it's not clear that just because you know Heter Mitzaref Isur, you're going to know Tam Ki Ikar, or because you know Tam Ki Ikar, you're going to know Heter Mitzaref Isur. Each one of them has a tzad chumra to it, and you couldn't learn one from the other. And that's why you need independent sources for each one of them. Not necessarily a Misora. Obviously, they had a Misora, but what's really driving their positions has to do with whether they think you can extrapolate from Geulei Nachrim. Rabbi Akiva's position by Geulei Nachrim is that it's not a Chiddush, and therefore he's able to extrapolate the Kol HaTorah Kula, so he no longer needs Tam Ki Ikar from other places. The Chachamim who think that Geulei Nachrim is a Chiddush can't learn anything out of Geulei Nachrim, therefore they have to learn out Tam Ki Ikar from somewhere else. So you're right, it's probably a matter of Misora, but the real factor that drives their positions is just what their view of Geulei Nachrim is, whether it's a Chiddush or not a Chiddush. So I'm a labor of Ashi the Rav Kahana. El Hadet Tanyo, what are you going to do with this Braita? Mikol sheyaseh migifen hayayin, micharzanim va'adzag. That it says, anything that comes from the grape is problematic for the Nazir, micharzanim from the pits until they zag, until the skins. We made al yisrei nazir shemitzarfim zeim ze, that they can be mitzaref, you can join them together. So Mara says, what do you need this for? Hashto the Rabbi Akiva Isur v'Heter Mitzarfim Isur v'Isur Mibayi. So according to the Chachamim, Heter Mitzarf the Isur only applies by Kodashim. So you're not going to learn anything by Nazir. But Nazir, you're right. That makes sense. This Brayta makes sense because you don't have Heter Mitzarf the Isur, but you have different component parts of Isur within Nazir will be Mitzareif. But for Rabbi Akiva, this Brayta seems to be meaningless. Why do you have a limud al suk that different pieces of Isur within Nazir can be Mitzareif to get to the level of Kazayit? As far as we're concerned, you can have Heter Mitzarf the Isur. We don't need Isur and Isur. So this seems to be a superfluous or unnecessary Brayta that's learning out of this Pasuk. Samalei, he says there's a difference. Isur v'heter b'vatachat. Heter Mitzarf the Isur only applies when they are simultaneous. That means that you're eating the Isur and the Heter at the same time. Then we say that the Kazayit is Mitzarf. Whether for Rashi that means you're eating the part of the bread that has no wine in it with the part of the bread that does have wine in it. Or for the other Rishonim, that means that you're eating the bread with the object that's absorbed in it, because the Heter and the Isur now are together, but you're eating them bevat achat. You're doing it simultaneously, then you can join them together. But if you were to eat the one half that has the wine in it, and then the part that doesn't have the wine in it for Rashi, or for the other Rishonim, you only ate the wine and not the bread that it was absorbed into, that would not be Heter Mitzarf the Isur. On the other hand, Isur v'Isur b'zechar zeh. But when it comes to Isur, even if they were sequential, even if you ate a chatzi gezayit of the chatzanim, and then you ate a chatzi gezayit of the skins, one after the other, not simultaneously, they would be mitzareif. So he says that's the difference. Even according to Rabbi Akiva, there still is a halachic difference between Isur and Isur, and Isur and Heter. Heter mitzareif Isur only is applicable simultaneous, whereas when it comes to Isur v'Isur, that applies even in a sequential situation. I mean, they don't have to be eaten at the same time. Even if you eat them in the normal kedei achilat pras that you would need, that would be sufficient to join them together and to bring the Isur together to form a single Kezayit. So even in the end, even if you hold Heter Mitzarf the Isur, still Isur v'Isur, there's a separate din, separate halacha min haTorah for that, because they have different dinim in the end. They're not exactly the same. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Batzeik, shebesidakei areva. You have dough that was placed in the cracks of the kneading trough. If you have a kazait's worth in a single location, chayav levaer, you have to eliminate it. Ve'im lav, if that's not the case, batel b'mi'uto. Fact is that it doesn't reach a kazait, so it's not significant enough. It becomes insignificant with the relationship to the kli, and therefore you don't have to be mevaer it. V'chein le'inyan tuma. This is not only unique to chametz, it is a din that applies by tuma. If he cares that it's there and he would remove it, then it's a chatitza. If he wants it to stay there, harihu ke'areva, becomes part and parcel of the areva. So we'll have to deal with the Mishnah somewhat cryptic. It dealt with two issues. One issue is size, and the other issue is hakpada, which is seems to be that size matters, kazayit and less than a kazayit matters. And then by tumah, it has to do with hakpada, whether you care that it's there or you don't care that it's there. They're both in the end after the same thing, which is bittul. What person say that the item is part and parcel of the kli, and where does the person still view them as separate items? One way to see it is kazayit and non-kazayit. Kazayit tells me it's so big that it becomes separate. It has significance beyond the kli, and therefore it doesn't become batel to the kli. The other way is hakpada. If I'm makpid that this item is stuck there and I want to remove it, then it's not a part and parcel of the kli. If I'm not makpid, it's batel. So the bottom line is, if it's batel, then it's part and parcel of the kli, you don't have to worry about it. If it's not batel, then it becomes problematic, both by tuman chametz. The question is, what drives it? Is it the size, or is it akpada, or maybe both? So that's what the Mishnah is discussing. Now we have a statement from Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel qualifying our Mishnah, which is, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Hoshana b'mkom she'en asurim lechazek. It's only true in a place which is not made lechazek. Aval makom she'asurim lechazek, in a place where it's made to strengthen the kli, einu chayav leva'er. You don't have to eliminate it at all. So basically the understanding here is that if the, no matter what the size of this dough is, if it's in a location that makes it possible to utilize this kli, then there's no way that you're not going to leave it there. Because if you take it out, the kli doesn't function anymore. Since the kli doesn't function anymore, then you're not going to not want it to be there. Of course you're going to want it to be there. You're going to be mevatelet. So let's now with the understanding here, the Gemara is going to change this understanding later on. But makom lechazek is shulayim, is the base of the kli. The floor of the kli, which is essential to holding the water in when you're going to knead in the kneading trough, if you have dough that's plugging a hole down there, it's but legamre. Doesn't matter if it's a kazayit, less than a kazayit, size is irrelevant at that point, because it's for sure that you're going to want to leave it there because that's what gives the kli function. But in a place you ain't makom lechazek, and we'll start here with that being the walls of the kli, if it's on the, along the walls of the kli where it's not as essential to have it plugged in there, then there'll be a difference between kazayit and pachot mikazayit, which is what the Gemara says now. So makom eshev lechazek enu chayav lever, michlal. From that you would infer the pachot mikazayit afilu b'makom she'en asui lechazek. Along the walls, which is a place that doesn't make or is not essential to the function of the kli, if it's pachot mikazayit enu chayav lever, then you're not chayav lever. So it will turn out, in this case, if it's at the floor of the kli, makom lechazek, doesn't matter, size becomes irrelevant. Kazayit, less than a kazayit, you don't have to get rid of it. On the walls, which is not a makom lechazek, then, if it's less than a kazayit, you can leave it there. But tell, it's insignificant. It's more than a kazayit, then it becomes a problem. Because you have greater than a kazayit, plus it's in a place that's not essential to the function of the kli. That's one way to read this Amar Yudah Mer Shmuel. In the first reading, as on the ratio of our Mishnah, on the case in the Mishnah, it says that, yesh kazayit b'makom chad, chayev leva'er, v'im batel b'miyuto. If lav, if not, b'miyuto, b'miyuto, he's explaining why. Why is it that the kazayit or non-kazayit matters? That's because it's makom she'en l'chazek. But makom l'chazek, don't have to worry about it at all. Ika de matin lo ha'seifa. Some people put that statement or that qualification of Yudah Mer Shmuel on the latter half of the Mishnah. V'im lav, batel b'miyuto. If not, then it's batel b'miyuto. It's batel because it is so small. So then he says, when's that the case? That's only the case, which is, Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmol, lo shanu elo makom asu lechazek. That's only in the base of the kaf. Ava makom she'en asu lechazek, chaya lever. Period. You have to get rid of it. Michlal. From that you would infer the kazayit, afilo makom asu lechazek, chaya lever. That on the floor, on the trough, then, if it's small, and it's the floor of the trough, you don't have to get rid of it. But if it's a kazayit on the floor of the trough, you gotta get rid of it. On the walls, you have to get rid of it no matter what. Doesn't matter what the size is, it's problematic. So if it's essential to the function of the kli, then we say kazayit, not kazayit makes a difference. Kazayit you have to get rid of because it's just too big. Not a kazayit, you can leave it there. On the other hand, on the walls of the kli, which are not essential to the function of the kli, it doesn't matter what the size is, you gotta get rid of it. So it's obvious that the second way of reading this is a much greater chumrah than the first way of reading this, these two ways of reading this. Now we have Tanya, Kalish Nekamo. We have a bright that supports the first way we read the qualification of Yehuda Mer Shmuel. Tanya Kalishna Batra. We also have a bright that supports the latter reading that we have of the qualification of Yehuda Mer Shmuel. Tanya Kalishna Kam, we have a bright that like the first lashon, which is Batzik Shibsidake Areva. You have this dough that's in the cracks of the kneading trough. If it's in the place where it's made or essential to the function of the kli, the base of the kli, Eino Chutzeitz ve'eino Over. There's no chatzitza, and there's not violation of Pesach because you want it to stay there. You have no intention of taking this out. You're going to leave it there because this is the only thing that makes the kli function. And therefore, it doesn't make a difference whether it's big, small, size is irrelevant. Function is the only thing that's relevant here, and you're going to be able to tell it. Umakom she'en asur lechazek. On the other hand, when you're on the walls, chutzeitz ve'over. Then it's a chatzitza, and you're over on Pesach for that. Now, the qualification, b'med, v'arim amurim b'kazayit. That's only if it's the size of kazayit. Aba pachom mikazayit, afil makom she'en asur lechazek. Even on the walls, eino chutzeitz ve'eino over. It's not a chatzitza regards to tumah, and it's not a violation of Isur and Pesach. So this is like the Lishna Kama that says that on the base of the trough, it's always good. It's no chatzitza, it doesn't block in terms of tumah, and it's not a problem if you have to put it in the mikveh. And on the side walls, then it matters the size. And the side walls, because it's not essential to the kli. If it's a kazayit, it's significant. You gotta get rid of it. It's a chatzitza. And if it's insignificant, I mean less than a kazayit, you can leave it there. It's batel. And you do not have to get rid of it on Pesach. It's not functioning like chametz anymore. You basically put it out of the world of chametz and you made it into a kli. It's batel to the kli on the base, on the floor. And when it's batel to the kli, it's no longer chametz. You have no intention of eating it. You have no intention of getting any benefit. You're making it part and parcel of the kli. And when it's a part and parcel of the kli, now you have a full kli. Your kli you don't have to get rid of on Pesach. So therefore, it's not problematic. From the chametz nuksha you're talking about, right? So by chametz nuksha, you have a problem because even though it's not edible, it's still chametz in the form of chametz. The whole thing is chametz. It's not that just a part of the chair is chametz. There, the entire chair is made up of dough. So if the entire chair is made up of dough, then you can't say it's batel, because it itself is dough, and that's chametz nuksha. Over here, since it's the kli is the major piece here, and this is just functioning as a part of the kli, it's batel to the kli. Like we have batel, like you have flavor. If you have iser inside of heter, Then the heter overwhelms the isur, and the isur is as if it doesn't exist. So to over here, the chametz is as if it doesn't exist because it's batel to the kli. But if the whole thing is chametz, you can't say it's batel to the kli because it itself is chametz. So that'll be the difference between chametz nuksha and this case over here. So then we have Tanya Kalishin of Bacho. We have a brighter that supports the latter explanation or qualification of Yudom Eshmo. But Seik Shibisidake Areva. You have dough in the cracks of the trough. Bimakoma Suida Chazek. If it's in the place that is essential to the function of the Kli, meaning the base of the Kli, Eino Chotzeitz. There's no Chatzitza, Eino Ver. Bimakom Sheena Suida Chazek. On the other hand, if it's in a place that is not Asuida Chazek, Chotzeitz, Veover. Then you Chotzeitz Ver. Bamed Varim Amurim. Bepachot mikezayit. That's less than a kezayit. Aval bekezayit. If it reaches a kezayit, afilu b'makom asui lechazek chutzeitz veover. That even if it reaches in the essential place at the base, the kezayit is too significant, and since it's too significant, it's not batel. So that's the same concept that we just spoke about. And when something is too significant, it's not batel to the kli. It retains its shem chametz. You can't say it's batel to the kli. So this is like the Lishna Batra that says that size matters. Even at the base of the kli, size matters. And therefore, kezayit will matter here at the base of the kli, which is different than what was suggested in the first breit. In the first breit, we said if it's in the base of the kli, it's automatically batel. Because it makes it functional, he'll be batel anything, no matter what the size is. On the other hand, in the second lashon, the breit is suggesting that at the base of the kli, like we said in the second lashon, it still matters. Size matters. And if size is too big, then it's too significant to be batel. Alright, so now the Gemara says, Kashin Adodi. You have these two lashonot. Fine. So we didn't know which one was which lashon. But now we have a brayta supporting each lashon. We actually have a stira in the brayta. The brayta are actually inconsistent in their positions. So how am I going to reconcile between these two brayta? So I'm Rav Huna, Sami Kilta Mikamei Chamirta. Because I have an easy solution to that problem. One is the kula. One is the chumra. We're going to take the one that is the chumra. We'll assume that the one that is the chumra is the right one because I have to make a choice here. I have to dispose of one of these brightot to keep one of the brightot. Say one's wrong, one's right. So if I have to make a choice like that, I'm going to say the chumra one is right, the kula one is wrong. Not because of any evidence that I have, it's just because if I have to make a decision with regards to isurim, I'm going to go the chumra over here. And chumra means that if it's at the base of the kli, kazayit is still considered to be significant, less than a kazayit's okay. On the wall of the kli, it'll be problematic no matter what. That's one answer. Rav Yosef Amar, Rav Yosef says, and we've seen this other places, but Rav Yosef, he says, Tana'e shakami alma. I don't understand. You're taking two positions of different tana'im that have no correlation to each other. It's one thing if you have one person or one tana saying something, and now you have a inconsistency in his position. So then you can come and say to me, how do you reconcile the inconsistency? Or if we have in a single breita, you have something that's inconsistent within the breita itself, you can ask the question, how do you explain this breita? But if I take one breita, which is independent, and another breita that's independent, you say they don't agree? You're right, they don't agree. I have two tanaim that have positions over here, and they don't have the same position. Why do you have to reconcile here? Why do you have to insist that we have to find some sort of common ground between the breitot? They argue. There's a difference in position here. That's a machloket tanaim. Enochanami tanaehi. It is a machloket tanaim, and I'll show you that. Titania. We have a breita. Hapach shi'ipsha. We have bread that went moldy, that went bad. Chayav liva'er. You have to get rid of it. Mineish ra'ui l'shochaka. Because you can roll it up. Ulechamea ba kamiso tachrot. And you can use it as a leavening agent for other breads. So even though the bread has gone bad or moldy, it's no longer good. It's going bad, the bread over here. But the bread can still function as a yeast or a sourdough in order to leaven other items. So it still has function. And so because of that, you have to get rid of it. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Mer, b'me dvar mamurim. When's that true? B'mikuyemet achila. If you're keeping it to eat. Aval kopet se'or, shiichta lishiva b'teila. If you decide to make this item into some sort of mound of dough upon which you're going to sit, then it's batel. It's gone. You don't have to worry about it anymore. You've now two things. It's not ra'oi la'achila anymore. You're not intending to eat it. Plus, you're being mevatelet. You're taking it and now you're nullifying its purpose and you're putting it into a position where it's null and void. So there, you see from this. Mida amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. When you see from Mishim and Elazar, Bitela, that is Bitela Michlau, the Tanakama Sever lo Bitela, that the Tanakama disagrees and thinks it's not Batel. Amalka Sever, he must believe. Kol Kazayit, Avagav de Mevatel, lo Batel. If you have something that's the size of a Kazayit, then you can't be mevatelet. Even though you were trying to mevatel, you made it into a chair that doesn't help you. So that's how we'll explain this machloket. You see here, we have other tanaim that have exactly this machloket. Within a kazayit, can you be mevatel a kazayit, or can you not be mevatel a kazayit? Shimon Lai says, no problem. You want to make it into a chair? It doesn't matter what size it is. It's mevatel. No problem of chametz. The Tanakhama says, over a kazayit, you can't be mevatel it. You got to get rid of it. Doesn't matter that you made it into a chair. It's just too big. It's too significant for you to get rid of. It's too significant for you to get rid of. You have a problem on your hands. You got to be mevayer it. Somalei Abai says, yeah, it's beautiful. Teratzta b'kazayit. You answered one of the two stirot between the braitot, which is the size of a kazayit. That means at the base of the trough, we said that the two lishonot argued about something that's the size of a kazayit. That means that if you have less than a kazayit at the base of the trough, everybody agrees that's fine. If you have more than a kazayit at the base of the trough, the Lishna Kama said fine. The Lishna Batra said no good. And that's exactly the positions being espoused by Rabbi Shimon Elazar and the Tana Kama here. So you've explained that difference. But there was another difference between them, was on the walls. On the walls of the trough, the Lishna Kama said that kazayit is problematic, but less than a kazayit is okay. In the Lishna Batra, on the walls, we said everything is problematic. So now you have it in a less than a kazayit, you also have a stira between the braitot on the walls. Well, where is the machloket tanaim to explain that? You're not showing me any tanaim that have positions that differ in this issue. So that can't be, your explanation is nice for a part of it, but doesn't get through the whole thing. And that's what Rabbi says, teratzta b'kazayit, pachot mikazayit mitaratzta. You didn't deal with the pachot mikazayit where there is an irreconcilable difference between the braitot. Ella, Rabbi suggests over here, this is the answer. Ha, baha, Rabbi Shimon Elazahi. Both braitot are authored by Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who says you can be mivatel something that is greater than a kazayit. Velokasho. The difference is, ha b'makom lisha, ha shalomo b'makom lisha. Fred, this is what you asked about before. There's a difference in the location where you need it, and a difference in the location where you do not need it. Rashi claims, the way Rashi learns the Gemara over here is, the Gemara is now changing the definition of makom lechazek and makom she'eno lechazek. Rashi basically says now that the makom lechazek is not about the strengthening of the kli, but rather it's the location with the kli where there's lisha being done. And this is what it means. In the first braita, when you say the makom lechazek, in the place that you're strengthening the kli, and makom she'eno lechazek, both of those are in a location where you're lush. And both of those are in a location where the kneading reaches. The base of the trough, for sure, the kneading reaches there. The walls of the trough up to the point where the kneading normally reaches. Then there will be a third area, which is above that. So there are going to be three areas in the trough. The base of the trough, the walls of the trough, and then the upper walls of the trough. In the base of the trough and the lower walls of the trough, there, the dough reaches it. It always reaches it, because when you're kneading, you're going to bump the walls, you're going to be at the bottom, you're going to touch all those areas. Above that, the top of the walls, the way upper area is the top of the walls, that's an area where the dough doesn't necessarily reach. That's an area where you're not going to reach it in the kneading, because it's too high up on the walls. So now, based on that, you're going to look at the first braita. The first braita says, v'makom lechazek, in the place that it is the chazek. So, where is the makom lechazek and makom she'en lechazek? So Rashi explains here that when you're talking about gon safa ha'elyona aval difanot, kare makom asu lechazek. So that's what the upper is. V'kamaita, kare af difanot makom she'en asu lechazek, v'af akav de makom lishahu. Even though it's a place where you need, it's a place she'en asu lechazek. Makom asu lechazek kare shulayim. So the base, the shulayim, is makom lechazek. The walls, where you can reach the lisha up to, is eno makom lechazek. That means, according to that first braita, the base, you can use any size. Any size is fine along the base. Doesn't matter if it's bigger than a kazayit, less than a kazayit. This is Rabbi Shimon Elazar. It's batel. The walls, the wall area, which is above the base, that area will have a din that if it's the size of a kazayit, it's problematic. If it's less than a kazayit, then it's okay. The upper walls above that area is never okay. It's never okay to put it over there because it's not patel over there. There you're not vatel it because it's not necessary and it's also not the makom lisha. So because of that, you don't need it. So anything on the upper part of the walls, problematic. The lower part of the walls where the lisha reaches, above a kazayit, we say it's no good. Below a kazayit is good. The floor, That's the area which gets the most working. There, everything is batel because it's so essential to the function of that area. So on the base of the base there, for sure you're going to be batel it because it's not functional at all. And therefore, any size is okay, and that's Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's position. If it's on the upper part of the walls, where you never go up to need, over there, no matter what the size is, it's problematic. The in-between stage, which is the defanot, the lower parts of the walls, where the lisha does reach, but it's not as essential to the function of the kli, over there, size will matter. Less than a kazayit will be okay, and greater than a kazayit will be problematic. Now, the second braita. The second braita's definition of chazek and lola chazek is this, which is that in the case where it's the chazek, that's the lower part of the walls. She'en asu the chazek is the upper part of the walls. So now in the second braita, when it says that you can kazayit, no, less than a kazayit, yes, it's talking about the lower part of the walls. When it comes along and says you can't do it at all, it doesn't matter what size, that's talking about the upper part of the walls. So now you've actually reconciled between the braitot. There's three areas, again, within the trough, and they're talking about, the two areas that they're talking about are not the same. The first braita is talking about the base and the lower part of the walls, and the second braita is talking about the lower part of the walls and the upper part of the walls. So now I've reconciled their positions, because the overlap between the braitot is the lower part of the walls. That's the second part for the first braita, and the first thing in the second braita, and they both say, kazayit is problematic, less than a kazayit is not problematic. So that's the way that Rabbi is going to reconcile between the Braitot and say it's all authored by Rabbi Shimon Elazar who says that greater than a kazayit can be batel, but that's only when it's an essential area, where it's in the base or the shulayim. When we move up to the lower parts of the walls, which are still important, but not as essential, then we'll start to differentiate between kazayit and less than a kazayit. All right, so then it's Rabbi's position of how to reconcile these Braitot. Now, that's Rashi's explanation that the Gemara now explains Makom Lisha Shema because there was Makom Lechazek. There's actually a Tosafot on the Amud Aleph, which is the Ri says almost something very different. He says the other way around almost. He says, Venir the Ri, the Makom Asur Lechazek, Hainu et Akli, Ben Be Makom Lisha, Ben Shalom Makom Lisha, Osim Lechazek. Doesn't matter if you're needing it or not needing it in that area, that's a Chazek. Ach, Be Makom Lisha, Yesh Lachmir Yoter. By the place of Lisha, you have to be more machmir. Sheish lachush, sheidabek meoto isa liisa acheret. The problem is that we're afraid that it'll stick. When you're kneading in there, there's dough that's filling in the cracks. That dough will attach to the dough that you're kneading inside the trough. They Lisha tibla min atam, or absorb the flavor. So what ends up, the Ri ends up saying almost the opposite of Rashi. Rashi maintains that the differential that we said to before, which was that the base or the essential areas of the trough are areas that you're more likely to be mevatel an item, and those are also the areas that's Makom Lisha, so the two are correlated, and he maintains that integrity of what we said before, which is Chazek is more likely to be Batel, and Makom Lisha is only relevant because that makes it more likely that it's essential to the Kli. That's all that Rashi, how Rashi explains it. According to the Ri, Makom Lisha is a totally different issue than Makom Lechazek, because Makom Lisha is more problematic, according to the Ri, whereas Makom Lechazek is less problematic. Makom Lechazek, you'd say you'd be Mevatel. But Makom Lisha is always problematic because the possibility of the dough getting attached to the dough that you're kneading in there. And therefore, he'll reconcile the Braitot in that way, which is Makom Lisha and Ein Makom Lisha means that Bim Makom Lisha, everybody agrees that it's problematic. Doesn't matter if it's the Chazek or Ein Lechazek. When it's Shalom Makom Lisha, then you can come up with these differentials. And that's how the Ri will read this Gemara. Just to know, because the way I read the Gemara was according to Rashi, who's not differentiated between Makom Lisha and Makom Lechazek. He sees them as being almost the same definition, but just giving us, we broke it down into three pieces instead of two pieces. The Ri says, no, they're actually totally different issues. Makom Lechazek would tell you to be batel. Makom Lisha tells you not batel because you're worried about the dough getting caught on it. And then he has that in-between stage, which is if you have smaller pieces, you can avoid it. Since it's in a place that's not essential to the kneading, plus it's in a side location smaller, then you could avoid coming into contact with it. So it'll turn out to the Ri is just the opposite. In the area that's the top part of the walls, everything is fine up there because there's no chance the dough is going to get caught up with the other dough. Because even if it's above a kazayit at the top, you're never going to mix it with the dough, and there it's clearly batel. On the base, it's always problematic because there, no matter what the size is, when you're rolling the dough, you're going to have to run over that, and it's going to cause a problem for you. On the lower part of the walls, it'll depend on size. If it's too big, you can't avoid it, and therefore it's going to be problematic. If it's small enough, then you can avoid it, even though it would be problematic if you bumped into it, but since you can avoid it. So he'll come up actually with the exact opposite shita than Rashi, where the base is more than the upper part, And Rashi has it the other way around, where the base is more mikil and the upper part is more chamur. Amar Rashi, lo teimash lo makom lisha agava de agno. Don't say that when it says shalom makom lisha means on the other side of the trough, meaning the outside of the trough. Ela asifta de agno. But rather it means on the rim of the trough. And there's a possibility that you could say over here that the makom lisha is the entire trough. You need in the entire trough. So that's makom lisha. And then shalom makom lisha means outside of the trough, on the back, or in the where the handles are. That's where you have shalom makom lisha. Rashi says, don't say that. But makom lisha means inside the trough itself. Shalom makom lisha is on the rim, or the upper part, like we said before, the upper parts of the wall where the kneading does not reach. Gemara says, pshita. That's, of course that's the case. Maudotema. So what we would have thought is, zimne da'atif umati lahotam. Sometimes that it floats up and the kneading reaches up to the upper parts of the walls. Kamash halan, that we don't call the makom lisha. Despite the fact that sometimes it gets up there, that's not a makom lisha. Makom lisha is only the base of the trough and the lower parts of the walls, but the rim or the upper parts of the walls are not considered to be makom lisha. So, Amar Rav Nachman, Rav, halocha k'Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. The halocha is like Rabbi Shimon Elazar, that even greater than a kezayit, you can be mevatel. Ini, is that really true? V'amar Rav Yitzchak Barashi, Amar Rav. We have another statement in the name of Rav. Imtach paneh betit. Only if you then insulated or you covered it with plaster, betelah. Then it's batel. Tachin, lo tach lo. It's only if you smeared on top of it or you basted it, plastered it with some object to cover over the chametz, then it becomes batel. But if you leave it exposed and out, then it's not batel. So how can he pass an aloha like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar that even a size of a kezayit is batel without any other factor being involved? Yet there's another psak of Rav which seems to say that you need to do something besides just have it be batel to the walls of the kli. You actually have to cover it over. Mar says, manda matniha, lo matniha. Yes, they're both in the name of Rav, but they're two different amuraim in the name of Rav. So you have one amura in the name of Rav, which is Rav Nachman, in the name of Rav, says aloha k'Rav Shim ben Elazar. And then you have another memra in the name of Rav, which is Vitzok Barashi in the name of Rav, talim tach ben abetit b'teila. So these amuraim argue about what the position of Rav is. Ikadamri, some say Amar Nachman and Rav ain't aloha k'Rav Shim ben Elazar. Some say that Rav Nachman's statement in the name of Rav was that the aloha is not a k'Rav Shim ben Elazar, but rather like the Tana Kama, if it's a kezayit, it's too significant, and it's not batel. Damar Rav Yitzchak Barashi Amar Rav, and now the second member in the name of Rav will be consistent with that, because Rav Yitzchak Barashi says in the name of Rav, that only if, in addition to it being batel to the walls of the clay, you do something on top of it, does it become batel. Otherwise, it's not batel. And then we can reconcile those two statements. It's interesting here that Rav Nachman is speaking the name of Rav. Generally, Rav Nachman speaks the name of Shmuel. Rav Nachman's a Talmud of Shmuel. It's interesting here that the Gemara has Amar Rav Nachman and Rav, which is a less common occurrence that Rav Nachman is saying things in the name of Rav. So then the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Nachman and Shmuel. Shnei chatei zitim. If you have two half zitim of dough, v'shil batzeik b'nehem, and you have a string of dough that runs between them. So we said now that there's a difference in these troughs. Whether it reaches the size of kezayit, doesn't reach the size of kezayit. What's the status over here? You have chatzi kezayit here, chatzi kezayit there, and they're not really connected except by this one string of dough between them. So can I connect them? Do I say they're a kezayit? Do I say they're separate? Chatzi kezayitim. So he says, Ruim, kishilo nitael echut, nitael imemo. Depends how thick that string or the connection between them is. If you can pick up that connection, that string of dough between them, and the two chatzi kezayitim will come with it, then they're considered to be a single kezayit and chayav de ve'er. And then you will be obligated to eliminate it because now you have a full kezayit there. Vim lav, if that's not the case, meaning when you pick it up, they separate or they will not come with it, enu chayav de ve'er, then you're not obligated to eliminate it. So the connection between these chatzik zeitim that are found in the cracks of the areva will be determined whether they're a kezayit or not, because that will depend on how strong the connection is between them. If the connecting piece of dough is so strong that it can pick up both of them, then they're considered to be one. Otherwise, they're considered to be separate. Amar Ula, lo amran, ela ba'areva. That's only true inside of the trough. Aval bebayit chayav leva'er. But if you have two chatzei zeitim that are floating around the house, even if they don't have a string between them, they're problematic. My time, what's the difference here? The zimnin, the kanishtahu. The time sometimes in the house where you'll sweep the house and they'll actually come together. In the trough, when they are put into those cracks in the trough, they are separate, and they remain in their separate places. They're not going to come together. So only if there's some factor that attaches them will we say that they're considered a single unit. But if there's nothing that's connecting between them, they remain as separate entities. Chatzik Zayit here, Chatzik Zayit here. Whereas in a house, even if they're in different parts of the house, if you have a Chatzik Zayit and a Chatzik Zayit, at some point you're going to sweep the house, or you're going to do something in the house, and there's a high likelihood that they'll get kicked around, moved around, and they'll end up being together. And the two Chatzik Zayitim will actually get together and become a full Zayit. Therefore, there's an obligation to eliminate it, even when they are separate. So that's it, because Zimin the Koneshuv and Afle Gabayododi, you'll sweep up the house, and then they'll fly in right next to each other. Someone will kick it around, you'll move it. Whatever the reason is, they'll end up coming together because they are not static. Inside of the Avayava, they're static. They're not going to move. So if they're separate, they remain separate. In the house, where they roll around, they can be moved around. In that case, we worry about these two Chatzay Zayitim ending up getting together and making a full Kazayit. Amar Ula, Bo'u b'marava, they pose this question in Eretz Yisrael. Bayit v'aliyah. If you have a house on the lower floor and then the upper floor, Mahu, what's the din there? Meaning there you have two separate areas. So do we say there that it's like the Areva, where it's considered to be two separate areas? Or do we say, since it still can move around when you have the Bayit and the Aliyah, it's not considered to be totally separate, because if you sweep them, they could bring them together. So therefore, it would be considered like a Bayit. So what is it? Is it like a Bayit, or is it like an Areva? Now, Imtim Salomar, Rashi says the Gemara continues like this. Imtim Salomar, Bayit v'Aliyah lo cheshinan. That a Bayit, the lower house and the upper part of the house, are considered to be separate. The two floors are considered to be completely separate, like a areva, not like a bayit. Then bayit vachsadramu. We're talking about a house and a entranceway, a house and a hallway, an entrance that has a achsadra off of it, which is some sort of area that has open. It's covered, but has the walls are open. What about that? That's like the entranceway. It's like the breezeway to get into the house. So in that case, what's the din? Because you have to walk through there to get into the house. Since you have to walk through to get into the house, they're considered to be one. Or do we consider them separate? And now the Gemara continues with the question. Imtim Salomar, Bayit Vachsadra are considered to be one, and they have a din of a Bayit, Shnei Bayatim, Zeh Lifnei Mizeh Mahu. What's the din of two Batim, one inside of the other? They're two Batim, they're two separate houses, but you must walk through one house to get to the other house. So there's a reason to put them together, because you have to walk through one to get to the other, so maybe they're considered one. Or there's a reason to separate them, because they're two physically separate houses, as opposed to a Bayit Vachsadra, which are one, belongs to one owner and one house. Over there, maybe we say they get together, and they're like a Bayit. But over here, with the Shnei Batim, maybe they're separate, Teiku. The Gemara leaves these as resolve all of these cases as to whether they're like an Areva or like a Bayit. The basic question is, are they like an Areva, where they're static and they will never get together? Or in a Bayit, where it can move around and they will get together? And the questions that are being posed here are some things that are in between a Bayit and an Areva, and the Gemara is trying to categorize them, which goes in which direction, how likely it is that these Shnei Zeitim will get together. So now, Tan Rabbanan, Hapat Shipsa, you have a bread that went bad, it's going moldy, V'nifsala melechol adam, and it's no longer ra'ui for people to eat it. V'akelev yechol achla, but it's still ra'ui lat kelev, and a dog would eat it. Mita tumat ochlim b'kabeitza. It still has a din of tumat ochlim. If you have a kabeitza size of it, it can convey tumah. Even if it's Trumat Tehura, it's burnt with the Tmeyah on Pesach. Meaning, even if it's Tehor, you still have to burn it on Pesach, the Trumat Tmeyah. We don't worry about it comes to May because it's Mamish Chametz. It's still problematic. Mishum Rabbi Natan Amru, Einu Mitama, it doesn't have Tuma anymore. So the principle, which we're going to say in 1 second, is Kama Azlaha Ditnan. So who does this follow, this Mishnah, which is Klal Amru B'Tarot. This is the general principle that we have by Tarot. Anything that is designated for human consumption or human food, if something starts out as being okay for human consumption, then it remains okay and remains a food item, not when it gets ruined from human consumption, only once it gets ruined from a dog eating it. So if you start out with a food in the base and it was never ra'ui for a person to eat it, then the fact that it's ra'ui for a kelev to eat it doesn't make it into ochel. That does not make it into food. On the other hand, if something starts out as being ra'ui li'adam, it was okay for a human being to eat it, then if it drops down and it's not ra'ui for a human being, but ra'ui for kelev, it is still problematic in that case. Because once you've started out as an ochel, you can't get rid of that shame ochel so easily. K'man, who does this follow? It's obviously Tlok Rabbi Notan. That's not like Rabbi Notan. That's like the Tanakamo in the position that we brought down before, which is that when it's ra'ui le'achilat kelab and not ra'ui le'achilat adam, it still retains its status of ochel, it still retains the problem become eitz on Pesach. Whereas Rabbi Natan thinks that once it reaches achilat kelab, it's no good anymore. So it's obviously not like Rabbi Natan. Tanu Banan, arivat ha'abadnim. If you have a trough that is used by the tanners, this is in which they work the skins or the hides, they are placing them inside of these troughs, and they put them into these chemicals in order to soften the hides and to tan the hides. Part of that process involves throwing solid, throwing in flour, kemach, into it. So, natanu tocha kemach, you put flour in there. Toch shlosha yamim, within the first 3 days, if it's within 3 days of Pesach, chayav to get rid of it. Now, this is before you put in the skins. You simply put the chemicals or the liquid that you're going to put the skins into, it's there, and you put the kemach in it. If it's within 3 days of Pesach, then the kemach still retains its shem kemach, and it's a problem for Pesach. Kodem shloshim, it was already put in there more than 3 days beforehand, inu chayav leve'er, because it dissolves, it already is ruined by sitting in the kli and stewing in these chemicals for that period of time, it no longer has the status of kemach, you don't have to worry about it. That's true, because if there's no skins put in it yet. So if you've yet to tan anything inside of these chemicals, inside of these liquids, then the 3 day rule applies. If you already placed the skins in there to tan them, even within 3 days of Pesach, you don't have to worry about it. Because once the skins get in there already, it becomes ruined. The kemach is totally ruined because of the smell and the pungency and the odor that comes out. It ruins it. Nobody would touch that kemach. Not a dog, not a human being. Nobody would touch that kemach anymore. It's completely ruined immediately. So Amarovo, aloha k Rabbi Natan. Aloha is like Rabbi Natan, that afilu yom echad, afilu sha'achat. Even if it's 1 day, even if it's 1 hour before Pesach, or before the Zman Yisro Chametz, once you put the skins in there, there's nothing to talk about anymore. The kemach becomes irrelevant because it's going to be ruined, and you no longer have a problem for it on Pesach. Okay, we're going to stop over here by the two dots.